Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. What's up, everybody? Happy Thursday. Happy Thursday. Titans and Bills got to get this thing figured out, Blaine. 3-2 Titans host the Bills on Monday Night Football. I got curious because I thought, I mean, there's so much talk about the offense, right? And defense is struggling against the run, you know, but the offense is struggling to protect Ryan Tannehill. He's been hit a lot, what, 20 sacks, only 24 last year.
So you went and looked up some numbers to justify that?
I like numbers. I just wondered. They were 3 in scoring offense last year. They were number 3. And so you and Kevin Dyson and me would have this conversation a whole lot. Well, if they could get, they get 3 stops a game.
Right, defensively.
Huh? Remember, and we broke it down. Like, we looked at it week after week after week. So we got to, like, week 11, 12, 13. A number was 3. If they could get 3 stops a game, they could beat anybody. But the defense was struggling. So that's kind of where we landed. So I thought, where are they in scoring offense? They're actually 10th right now, even with all the trouble. They're 10th in scoring offense, 26.4 points per game, and they're 10th in total offense, 389. The 9 teams ahead of them all average over 400 yards per game, so they're next at 389 points.
So do they break it down? What are they in rushing and what are they are in passing and then total offense?
Yeah, and I can get that. This is what I wrote down this morning, though, just because I wondered, and again, it's right here. I can get it.
Because you could be in number 2 in rushing and then be number 14 and be overall 10.
Yep.
You know what I'm getting at? So it kind of can be skewed that way. I don't feel like that they're a prolific offense by any means like last season. No way.
It doesn't feel like that to me. That's why I'm surprised they were number 10.
Yeah, maybe they're just looking at overall yardage. But that sounds good on the surface. It shows you, you know, how stats can just give you a gauge, you know, and not actually tell you what's really going on. Because, man, without A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, just imagine what they'd be. Would we be in the top 5? That's how I feel like it should be.
See, me too.
If not, then you're going to start looking at it and say, we can put any pieces, solid NFL pieces in there, and we can still run our offense.
Right.
That's what you'll start as a GM, coach. You'll start believing some of these stats. We all know certain players makes, you know, offenses and defenses better.
So they are number 3 rushing offense, 168 yards per game. They trail Cleveland and Dallas only in the rushing attack.
Mm.
So, and this goes, like you said, passing. I'd have to count back, but there are 6 teams worse than them. So what does that make them out of 32? 26. So near the bottom in passing.
In passing.
Top in rushing.
See? So at the end of the day, they're a middle-of-the-road offense. That's how I look at it. They're at 15, 16, maybe 12 at some point in time, you know, depending on who they're playing or have a good day or who's healthy or not. So, yeah, right now, it doesn't matter about those stats to me. They look like, at this point, a middle-of-the-road team.
Yeah.
You know, going into the season, we were thinking, okay, playoff-contending team, Super Bowl-contending team. Well, they don't look like that. And you can say, okay, you can blame health, but you can do what you want to do. At the end of the day, everybody else is kind of going through the same things. And they've had 2 valuable pieces. 3, really, with Dupree.
Yeah.
It's not played very much at all.
And Caleb Farley hasn't played much. First-round pick. Second-round pick hasn't played hardly at all. Dylan Raiden's. Monty Rice hasn't been a big factor. Early pick.
Raiden's may now. With Tyson Umbrello, your guy.
Yeah.
It's Umbrello needs an Umbrello.
If they threw away the umbrella because it's about to be raining on Raiden's. Hey, man. Hey, man.
I knew I couldn't beat you at your game.
Hey, man. How you feeling? You rested?
Yeah,
you're going to have to go and take on these. I was listening to some Bills stuff this morning.
But you Bills Mafia?
Well, not the Mafia, the Table Breakers, but the people who cover the team. And we're talking about the defensive line. We keep throwing around. It's like 10 guys. It's 11 guys. They have 11 defensive linemen. They dress 9 on game days. So the last few guys are just jousting, you know, to try to get their 25 snaps. And everybody plays. It's pretty amazing. But this,
as I said before, their front 4 or front 8 is pretty impressive.
And then they're good on their back end, too.
Now, they didn't do any blitzing versus the Chiefs. I would assume that they're going to do a little bit different against the Titans. think their familiarity with the Chiefs, understanding how you got to, you know, stop that style of offense, is totally different than ours. You have to have, even if it's just run blitzes, they have run-type blitzes installed. They have to have those to play the Titans when you're going against the King. It's impossible. So I would expect that they're going to show some things maybe they showed earlier in the season, even though it's still early. I mean, maybe week two, three, or maybe week one when they lost to the Steelers. Because this, I would say the Titans offense is a conventional offense. You know, they're not, you know, having five wide receivers out there. They do a lot of, you know, two tight end, three tight end, then they switch it up and come with three receivers, maybe four at times,
right?
Very rarely. I think they will. I don't think the same game plan is going to be the one they use against the Chiefs versus the Titans. You would probably go back and look at the film from last year and look at that and see how they play. In fact, because obviously they did fairly well in holding, you know, the King down. Yeah, people forget.
Yards. I think it was his lowest total of the year against Buffalo.
Yeah, he did that. Now, they got up on him, and then they were, you know, at that point in time, I don't remember how much the King really played, but they made some plays on defense. They made a couple picks, tip balls and everything else, and they were playing catch-up the Bills, but they did a fairly good job. I mean, everybody remembers the, you know, Norman straight on, but I mean, he only gained like 5 yards or something.
Yeah, play didn't count even. It was got called back, remember?
Okay.
And it was still poor Norman can't go to the grocery store without saying that.
Man, I can't imagine it. Man. I tell you, I got straight on like that one time, Corey Dillon. Yeah, that would have went viral. Man, he got me somewhat similar to that. As a tackler, you never want to have your feet crossed.
Right.
And he was crossing, and Henry, so you had no power. Once he pressed on you, you were going to fall.
Right.
Yeah, you know, so it was unfortunate that he's running sideways, and then Henry says, well, I'm going to go right at you. Instead of trying to avoid him, he went at him. He said, this little guy, I got to get him.
What's the best way? Because you mentioned this. You said that the Chiefs tape is out there. So let's don't just repeat that. Let's do something different. You talked about run blitzes. So if you are really attacking a team in the run game, like everybody seems to do with the Titans, what's the antidote on offense? If a team is run blitzing you and hitting those gaps and doing those things, what's the best antidote? How do you beat that on offense?
Oh, well, for me, I would play action pass because there's predictors.
Right.
You know, they had tendencies, and everybody knows they're running left. I mean, and then they stop it early until they just get pounded in submission. But I would play action pass. That's why I always talk about the setup.
Right.
What's the counter move offensively and defensively? That's really what it is. You got to, against the Titans type of offense, you're going to anchor the contain, and then you don't want to be going at an angle. So you don't want to do a lot of slanting and stunning because then you're getting your guys running at an angle down the line, and then it's easy to push you, and then you can kind of choose this gap. Mm-hmm. You want to try to set your guys up and get penetration. That's what kind of stalls that. Now it's easier said than done. You got another 300-pound guy in front of you.
Right.
That's what I would do. Continue to do more boots. The screen has been effective. I'm surprised nobody has seen how the Titans are setting up those screens. I'm sure all of them are a little bit different, but in one game you can see it's the same, mm-hmm. You know? So when you go back, you say, well, we're going to do this kind of screen. I thought that was great by Downing there and that in the game. So he's done a pretty good job with that. I just think you got to keep the teams off balance. I would do, and I always say no huddle. It's just kind of broad brush. It's really no huddle. You just go up to the line. You start calling your play. You take your time. You see how they're set up. You want to catch them off where they don't have to bring in another four guys to rush the passer. No, we're going to keep these four here.
Sure.
Because those guys aren't used to playing a lot. So we're going to do – you run those guys in you want to. I'm going to snap the ball. So that's kind of a plan of attack. If I'm offense, I would definitely do that. I don't want those guys get comfortable out there. What else would I would do if I was the Titans? Naturally, you're still always going to go with the King. I'm going to try to get them some one-on-one matchups and try to – see my big boys, since they going to be back, supposedly. A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. Do you get paid the big bucks? Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. I'm going to throw some up there for you. Make a play for me. Make a play. They have some really good DBs. The safeties and the corners are really solid. Even the nickel guys, Johnson, so they've got some great pieces. The middle linebacker, Edmonds, can run with anybody, any tight end. He's kind of a modern-day Keith Bullock. in my mind, but he's playing middle linebacker,
yeah,
not outside. And that's kind of why it's changed, because all the passing.
Right.
He has length. He can run. They have a history of the Edmund, you know, brothers in the league. I think his father even played in the league. So they had like three guys just from that family. Well, the other one's a safety with the Steelers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, these guys, hey, man, so you got to know who you're dealing with. So they got some great pieces on defense. So the one thing we don't want to happen here is for the Bills to get up on us early, and now we're chasing the points. And I don't think the Titans style will ever be that way unless it gets to the fourth quarter that they're going to chase. They're still stick with their model.
Right.
If they get up by enough where you start saying, hey, we got to change what we're thinking, that's probably the line for me is 12. It may be different for them.
Sure.
But, yeah, because now that leads to their defense being able to sit back and make some plays.
Isn't it crazy, though, that we've seen the Titans team at times be losing by 12, 13, like at the beginning
of the
fourth
quarter? And they're patient. They'll still go.
They just keep pounding it.
Well, I think there was one game. I can't remember the game. I think it was, a year and a half ago, where they realized if we just stay with the run, we don't get too far where we can still be in reach.
Right.
We can win this game still. And I think they won the game and they realized, all right, we're going to always stick with the running game. Henry's our guy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I mean, and it shows in tape now. And then now everybody knows they're going to stick with their game plan.
Yeah. ZW adds in the Zone TV chat, man, got to spread the field some more. Get nine dudes out of the box against the King, he's saying.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
but you can spread them out. Then you can motion them back, bring them back in. I'd like to see them do some of that with McNichols, too, though, at the same time, which they've done. But I'm talking about run them, you know, and run the ball and give Henry maybe a rest on first down on a series or two.
Yeah. Well, this ought to be a fun game. They got the Bills. They got Kansas City. They got at Indy, at Rams, then they host the Saints. You got to win one of these next couple of games, Bills and KC. I mean, you got to.
So you're saying you want to split?
I mean, at this point, somebody said, I'm going to shake your hand and offer you a split on these two games. Would you take it? Not as a player, just as you and me sitting here.
Oh, hey, player, definitely not.
No.
But, sitting here as we're talking about it, I would say this would be the tougher one to get.
Yeah.
I think the Bills are the number one AFC team, as I said the other day. And so this would be a huge statement for the Titans across, you know, the country, really, that they're for real. We can play against all the elites.
Yeah.
Who cares what happened with the Jets 2 weeks ago?
Right.
You beat the Bills, you go, whoa. Whoa. Because they're playing with confidence. I like what I see offensively and defensively. And I like the way Allen is carrying himself, and everything is no big deal. It's just like, this is what I do.
Like an MVP.
Yeah, he looks different than last year.
Zach Bingham, he's no different than last year. He's still with A to Z Sports. He's going to join us next. He's an Ole Miss guy. Ole Miss in Tennessee getting set to play. We'll talk that. We'll talk Titans. We'll talk everything with the Z of A to Z next. Lane and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Zach Bingham jumping on with us. A to Z Sports. He's the Z of A to Z.
Yeah, he's the co-owner.
He is a co-owner. At Bada underscore Bingham.
Yeah, but we got some callers, right?
Hey, Zach, let's do this. I know we got you on Zoom. We have Colt in Memphis who the memo says he wants to ask about Anthony Firkser. Are you cool? Let's just take all this one together. Is that fine with you?
Bring Colt on.
All right, Colt in Memphis. Colt, say hello to Zach Bingham and Blaine Bishop and Lucas Panzeca.
Gentlemen, how you doing? And then Zach, A to Z, you're doing some good stuff, man. I check that out daily. I'm a big Vols fan, so, man, y'all are doing a great job on covering my Vols, so I appreciate that.
Appreciate you, Cole.
On Firkser, it's like, I don't know if he's still injured, but, you know, the Jets game just seemed like it made a ton of sense for him to be heavily involved in the game plan with the injuries. And then over the last couple of years, he's sort of been that, I don't know, kind of Swiss Army knife, but just kind of he's not Travis Kelce, but a matchup nightmare for linebackers and safeties. And I don't know. I mean, he's getting a little more involved, so maybe his health has been the issue. Maybe he's getting closer to 100%, but just seems like he's not been involved as much as we all thought he would be, especially when we let Jonnu go, which, you know, I don't think it merited paying Jonnu what it was going to take to keep him. But be interested in your all's thoughts, because we don't really have a go-to guy on third down and short, that or third medium, and Berkshire's been that guy, or at least one of those guys, the last few years. Just kind of wonder, he's kind of been a ghost so far.
Colt, thank you, man. Ghost call right in time for Halloween. Zach, I think we all sort of hoped that Anthony Ferkser would help fill that void left by Jonnu. Really, the surprise tight end for this team has been a guy that they let walk in free agency, and then he came back as Michael Pruitt.
Yeah, it has been a surprise. And you know, Anthony Ferkser, I actually just looked it up while Colt was asking that question, because his time to shine was on 2nd and 5 with 28 seconds left to go in overtime. Whoa. In New York.
Yeah.
When he dropped the football. Yeah. And that is a catch that starting tight ends make from their quarterbacks. And I think that could have changed the dynamic of that overtime game, because you got 28 seconds left and maybe, you know, you're within reach to try to win that game, then try to tie that game. We all know how that ended. But Ferkser, you know, coming into this year, he had a lot of weight on his shoulders and he hasn't stepped up. And Mickey, you're right. You know, the guy that has really brought the production has been Michael Pruitt, but that tight end group as a whole,
yeah,
big drop off from a handful of years ago, because the Titans have usually always been a tight end heavy team. Blaine knows that to his days when he was a Titan, and they've kind of gone away with that with the Julio Jones trade. But when your wide receivers aren't available, your tight ends have to be. And that's been a struggle the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I would completely agree with both of you guys. I would just add this, though. You know, a lot of people wanted them to have an elite tight end. To me, I don't even look at it as a position. I feel like what you just said, Zach, is that you have to have two big-time weapons. It can come from anywhere, whether it's a receiving running back, tight end, another receiver. So I think they have that. They just haven't been available as much. So then now the pressure is on Ferkser. When he's a role player, he's really good. And that's what happens in a lot of, you know, teams, is they think a role player also then become the main guy. And I think he's not that kind of player. I think he's a route running tight end, and that's where he's at, and he's comfortable there. When he has to be the number one guy, I just don't think that he feels comfortable all the time, at least now, especially coming off an injury early in the season and then trying to get back into the flow.
But I will say this, his role is to catch the football in overtime on 2nd and 5 to help your team win.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. I mean, you're not going to catch all the balls they throw to you. Has Julio or A.J. Brown done that? See? So that's what I'm saying. We're asking him to be something that he's not, even in a critical situation. Well, critical was never critical when you're a role player. So the pressure doesn't mount to make the catch.
Zach Bingham, our guest, A to Z Sports. I know we're going to get into Ole Miss and Tennessee. You're an Ole Miss guy, and you live in Tennessee. We'll talk about all that. But Colt kind of steered us down this Titans road. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. There's been questions, heck, even of the Titans coaching staff. Do you feel like this is too much use of Derrick Henry? And, you know, what was the quote from Todd Downing? No one said in my headset, don't run him, you know, right here. You know, hey, make sure you pull him out here. They don't seem concerned about it. Are you concerned about it, Zach?
Yeah, Zach would hold back some of his carries, right?
Yeah. Well, so with Derrick Henry, it's interesting because he's just such a big piece to this puzzle of accomplishing your goal. And it's a longer season. It's 17 games. He's really going to be called on a lot the next 4 when you think about Buffalo on Monday night, Kansas City, Indianapolis, and LA, because those are 4 tough teams. But I do think that, you know, the backup running back situation is improved from last year, where you've had McNichols make some big third down catches. That's a plus. But we talked about this on the show this morning, kind of regarding the health and the scheme going into the next several games, is I want to see this Tennessee Titans team fully healthy. I don't think that we're going to see them fully healthy. For the next 4 games, though, I want to see them with the guys that they brought in, right? Like the Julio Joneses. I think Derrick Henry can carry you to a point, but to beat the Buffalo Bills on Monday Night Football and to follow that up and beat the Kansas City Chiefs the following week, Ryan Tannehill has to have somebody else besides Derrick Henry. I don't think he can do it himself. Now, he is, we like to call on A to Z Sports, Derrick Henry is a cyborg. He is an unlike, he's a fictional character in the NFL.
Yeah.
He stays healthy. He's massive. He is a beast to take down. You got him in his prime right now. You don't want to overuse him. You have to use him, but it is Todd Downing. I kind of gave him, you know, the first quarter of the season to figure out what his strategy is going to be. Well, his strategy tells us that he's going to run Derrick Henry as much as possible. I think he's got to figure out situations where he can let Derrick Henry be a decoy and get other guys and set them up for success. Like their tight end position, they need to get more out of that, and we'll see what happens when Julio and AJ come back healthier, which I know it's not official, but Julio Jones, I expect, this is my personal opinion, to play on Monday night against the Buffalo Bills, and he's got to give you some production to take some carries away from Derrick Henry.
Zach Bingham breaking it down here with us from A to Z Sports on Blaine and Mickey.
Yeah, great stuff, Zach. I'm going to stay with the Julio Jones. How much do you think he will impact the game, as well as how much will he play? Let's say, will they have him on a pitch count?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think Julio Jones, I think what happened was at the end of the Indy game, something happened to his hamstring. That was, you know, reported. That's what we've seen in the injury report. And I think they looked at the Jets and the Jags to say, Julio Jones is an older player. He's older than AJ Brown. You've got to kind of come along a little bit slower. And I think they thought that they were going to beat the Jets and the Jags. Now they split, they're 1-1. I think that the Titans need Julio Jones on Monday night, because if you beat the Buffalo Bills at the end of the season, you can be, and this is the Titans mindset, and it should be, competing for the number one seed. That should be your goal, and Buffalo stands in your way, and it looks like Buffalo is going to be there. Now, the Titans have the benefit of a very easy division. The Jags, the Texans, and the Colts are not playing good, and their records are disastrous. So you got to take advantage of that. So I think that they'll play Julio, honestly, the majority of the game. There will be sets. Maybe if there's one wide receiver set, it's not going to be Julio. It will be AJ instead. But overall, you can't get down because you're going to have to rely on your wide receivers. I think that Mike Vrabel and this game plan, I think they play Julio as much as Julio can play.
Well, you were talking about Todd Downing and how he did a good job at least setting up screenplays and everything else. What grade do you give him at this point in the season? I know it's still early yet, but let's see if he gets a passing grade from my man from A to Z, the co-owner.
I'm not going to give him an F.
I didn't think you were going to give him an F.
Yeah, that got dark and early.
That's telling me what you're thinking, you're not too happy.
Well, I'm not going to give him an A either. I think I would give him a C plus because he's had to deal with some adversity within his personnel. As we know, AJ and Julio have both gotten hurt. You have Derrick Henry that has been the staple, but his offensive line hasn't been great for Ryan Tannehill, and that hinders your play calling. Plus, they lost the lead against New York. They had to play comeback. Now, you know, in Jacksonville, that was, and it's unfortunate that I would say it was a gritty win, but it was a gritty win. They should have controlled that game better than they really did. But I think there's still a lot for him to learn about this offense in the next several weeks. The one thing I will say, as far as Todd Downing, I see a lot better game plan from week one, which you all know it happened with Arizona, to where they are now heading into week six. So that is good. That's improvement. You always want to get better. He definitely has not done an A job and he hasn't failed, but he needs to start inching up into the high B pluses when it comes to, you know, mid-November, because that's when football really matters and you're trying to find your position in the playoffs. Mm.
Well, something that has failed, and as Ty Sambrello's body, it has failed him. He is now retired. I mean, were you surprised to retire? Why can't he just go on injury reserve and still get a check? I would have done that, man. How smart is he, man? Come on. What happened here with all this tension in the building?
Well, Buck Rising on AtoZSports.com, I'll give a quick plug, and you guys are great partners to our company. Buck had the report of some things that Ty Sambrello was struggling with within the facility. And I think something definitely happened because it is too unique for a player that was getting playing time that is not a starter to retire in the middle of the season on the eve of the biggest four-game stretch of the season. You have to be unhappy or something has to happen. And I think that's what Buck revealed, that maybe there is some pressures that Ty Sambrello was not willing to take consistently over the next several weeks or the rest of the year. And I think we have to figure out, was that a singular incident between Sambrello and the facility, or is it bigger? Because if it's bigger, then I think, you know, over the next two games, Buffalo and Kansas City, if they lose those games, I think more stuff will start to come out, right? Because losing creates chaos. Yeah. Now, winning cures everything. So it's unfortunate because the offensive line has not played well. Taylor Lewan, I think he said it himself, is not the year that he wanted to start out. And what happened? Now, I think Lewan has gotten better. I think the offensive line has improved. But you got to protect Ryan Tannehill. He's probably your second biggest asset on the team besides Derrick Henry. I know he plays quarterback, which is unique. Usually the quarterback is the biggest asset, but they've got to get better on this offensive line. And you hope that Sampaio's exit is not something bigger of a cause of concern.
When you say that, let's say, are you talking about more his injury and maybe he was playing where he wasn't healthy? I mean, what issue do you think, if you were speculating, that it was?
I think it was his unhappiness within the building. And, you know, unhappy player.
With his coach? I mean, what do you mean?
I think with his, as Buck Rising reported on our website, I think it was maybe some relationships within the facility. I think that's the best way that I could put it. And as I think everybody can understand this, when you're unhappy at work, it starts to creep into your other life. And it got to a tipping point, Blaine, right? I mean, you don't up and retire and pay millions of dollars. Yeah. That's why I don't think it's just and he hasn't spoken to the media because he filed his the Titans put him on the retirement list. I just think that this could be bigger than what we know. And it just doesn't sound like he was happy within the facility. But that tells us something about the facility. I mean, it does. That's not good. And if he was put in a position that he was uncomfortable with, then that's not good either. And so, like I said, I think that the test of the Tennessee Titans will be over the next several weeks against tough competitors and tough competition to see how they perform in the limelight against Monday Night Football against the Bills. And everybody's going to be watching that Chiefs game because everybody watches the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes.
Mm. Well, with Zach Bingham from A to Z Sports, co-owner of A to Z, and he's an Ole Miss grad, man. I know you're going to the game, right?
I am. I'm going to Knoxville this weekend. I'm really excited. I think Neyland's going to be rocking.
Okay. I'm still waiting for my invitation to go to the Grove, too. So just let me know, man. You got all my information. But we're on with Zach Bingham, co-owner of A to Z Sports. I'm waiting, too.
Well, we wanted to make sure we got a couple of minutes left, Zach. Wanted to make sure that we hit this. It's a real interesting week because the Titans are embarking on this, you know, impossible-looking part of the schedule. Really, it's the same for Tennessee. They got Ole Miss on Saturday night. Then they go to Bama. Then they go to Kentucky. Then they host Georgia. So both teams have kind of had some chance to put some hay in the barn early. But Josh Heupel, I think the early returns have been good, but this game with Ole Miss, who can outscore who is sure how it feels like it's going to go.
Man, Tennessee has probably the biggest momentum they've had in quite some time, you know, in years. 62 points and 45 points against SEC opponents. Now, be it Missouri and South Carolina, those are huge confidence boosters heading into a game where under the lights, Ole Miss, the return of Lane Kiffin, the storylines are going to be unbelievable. And then on the other side, Ole Miss, the thriller win last week against Arkansas, that I think boosted their confidence that they can come into Neyland and take care of business. I was surprised. Look, I think Vegas is expecting 80-plus points. Yeah. I hope there's 80 points because I think the stadium will be just unbelievable if that many points are being scored. But I think it comes down to Ole Miss's improvement on defense. They were really bad, and Lane Kiffin said this last week against Arkansas. If they continue that trend, I think they can allow Tennessee to hang around in the game. I think this is going to be a close game. I don't expect this to be a blowout on either side because I think both teams have offensive firepower to get them back in the game if they go down by 14 or 17 points. It's all going to be about Tennessee's offense and Hendon Hooker being able to consistently score on Ole Miss's defense and the adjustments that Lane Kiffin and his defense are going to make this week heading into the game. But man, I haven't been this excited about a Tennessee game in a long, long time. Again, I'm an Ole Miss guy, but I think the atmosphere, I think Vol fans are looking forward to it. I think Ole Miss fans are traveling for it, so it's going to be good.
Zach Bingham on with us talking a little football here on Thursday on Blaine and Mickey.
Well, since you're always helping, educate us, you need to educate us on how the media works, and that is the Adam Schefter, Mr. Editor, being in the media, sending back to, Alan on his email to make sure everything was correct. How did you see that view or view that, what he did with the email with Adam Schefter?
So I think that in reporting, and obviously Adam Schefter has been doing this for a very, very long time. And
who apologized, by the way, too.
He admitted his fault. And I thought Derek Carr put it very perfectly. He was talking to the Raiders media after Gruden got fired, and he said he loved the man but hated the sin, but also said that if we uncovered everybody else's emails, what would we find, right? And I think Adam Schefter got caught. The Mr. Editor, I think, was in jest. I don't think that is how Adam Schefter reports. I think the longevity and the history of your work should mean something, and I think in that instance, he probably would have done it differently, but I don't think by any means that was a fireable offense. And I don't think people view Adam Schefter any differently after that. He came out and apologized and moved on. And you wish that in some instances, and again, every circumstance is different. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're learning in this Twitter society, where you can be canceled at the snap of a finger. And if things are uncovered and you turn out to be a bad guy, like I think John Gruden was revealed to be, you've got to take your punishment. And the punishment for Gruden is resigning from a very powerful position of being a head coach in the NFL. And he's taken a lot of licks, and he should, from what he said. From Adam Schefter's perspective, I think this is a mistake. He apologized for it. He probably won't do it again. And I bet you that Adam Schefter has changed his reporting style from over the last several years, and he doesn't do that anymore. But hey, sources are sources, and behind closed doors, it is unique on how reporters get the information that they do, and that's why they're sources, and that's why they're rarely revealed.
Zach, good stuff, man. Saturday night's going to be fun, so go live it up for the rest of us who aren't going to be in the building. People can follow you at @Bada_Bingham, or of course on any of the A to Z Sports platforms. Always great catching up with you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yes, okay, sir. Zach Bingham right there. When we come back, it's time for the weekly stat dump. We have another thing with Derrick Henry. There's another one. He's doing something else.
What?
Like another 62-year kind of, oh, my gosh, thing for Derrick Henry. That's next. Blaine and Mickey. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. So every Thursday you get an email from the Titans if you're part of the media, and it just says, you know, that this guy's done this many times, or this guy's looking to do this in this next game or on Monday night or whatever it is. And they're always real good stats, and I like stats. And it's just become this unbelievable thing about Derrick Henry every week. So it's like every week they send these stats, and usually it's like somebody needs a catch and it'll be 12 games in a row, or you know, the defense is looking for its second straight performance of allowing less than 28 points or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But the Derrick Henry stuff is always like Derrick Henry and Jim Brown are the only two people. So here's this week's.
Yeah, well, he's FedEx player for the like third time already, right?
Yes, third time already.
This season.
Why not just call it somebody tweeted me and said, why not just call it the King Award?
Not even in the top five and MVP.
Not in the top nine, according to some. Yeah. All quarterbacks, nine quarterbacks.
He's pissing the King off.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. What's your stat that he's done again?
And I didn't even realize this. I read it again in the commercial break. Uh-oh. This particular streak started the day Ryan Tannehill became the starter.
Mm.
So the Kings had a different life under Tannehill, that's for sure. So here we go. Another active streak of Derrick Henry's. 30 consecutive games with at least 50 yards ranks among the top three in the NFL in the last 62 seasons.
No, say this again.
He has 30 games where he got at least 50 yards rushing in the game.
Okay.
And in the last 62 seasons, it's in the top three. So since the beginning of 1960 season, the only players to reach 30 consecutive games with at least 50 yards on the ground are Derrick Henry, Priest Holmes, and of all people, you would remember this guy, Chris Warren, who played for the Seahawks. That's it. So number one is Priest Holmes. He did it 38 times in a row.
I played against two of those guys. I played against Warren and Priest Holmes.
Yeah.
Priest Holmes is underrated.
And he wasn't even drafted.
Yeah.
He came out of nowhere, this guy.
I think he went to Texas.
Yeah.
He didn't flourish until he was in that offense at Kansas City Chiefs because he was with the Ravens. And he was really good, but then he blew up because he could catch the ball too. He wasn't a big guy either. He was probably a 5'8"-ish guy.
It was the greatest example of, because sometimes people go, that guy stinks. No, that guy doesn't stink. He's in the wrong scheme. Yeah. They're not using him. Priest Holmes went to Kansas City and was like an MVP candidate type guy.
Perennial Pro Bowl after that.
I mean, he had three. I'd have to look, but I want to say it's like 3 years for Priest Holmes for the numbers you would look at.
He was kind of like Marshall Faulk.
Yes.
I mean, seriously. I mean, his impact in the game. I don't know if his skill sets were as good, but he was that kind of impact.
So
Derrick Henry's in that conversation.
So only three people since 1960 have had 30 games in a row. 50 yards, that seemed hard, but that shows you how hard the league is. Priest Holmes has 38 games in a row. Chris Warren had 31. Derrick Henry has 30. So if he gets 50 yards, he only got 57 against Buffalo. To me, that's what makes this so interesting. Now, they got turnovers, and they ultimately, like you said earlier, you don't have to wear the king out. If you don't have to wear the king out, you're doing it other ways. Chris Warren had 31 games. Derrick Henry has 30. If he gets 31 on Monday night, then it's Priest Holmes, Derrick Henry, Chris Warren. Like, that's the list.
Definitely wouldn't have put Chris Warren on the elite category.
So nope.
It's kind of surprising there.
Just consistent there.
Well, his style is just a little bit different, but his running style was kind of like Chris Brown that we had here. Was that his name? Chris
Yeah.
Brown? Yeah, he was similar to him in his style.
He ran up tall.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was amazing that he, you know, stayed healthy for that long with that style. So, you know, some guys weren't tall, but then all of a sudden when they're getting hit, they get down.
Yep.
You know, everybody used to say that about Eric Dickerson, but you never saw anybody get a great shot on him.
Nope.
He was only standing up when he was in the open field. Yeah.
Big, fast. Yeah. That's another 2,000-yard guy, Eric Dickerson.
Yeah. He was pretty nice. You know, that was when, you know, I'm from Indy, so that's when we had the Colts, and they did all that, you know, trading for him and everything else when he was holding out from the Rams.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he, like, strayed a hamstring, and it was like, ah, oh, boo, throw him back. He's a piece of trash. I was like, wow. Hey. Not knowing that I'd eventually make it to the league. I had no idea.
So here's a couple others on the way out. Henry can also accomplish the following this week against Buffalo. He needs 110 rushing yards and one rushing touchdown to join Jim Brown, Eric Dickerson, and Terrell Davis as the only player since 1960 with 750 rushing yards and 8 rushing touchdowns in the first 6 games of a season.
Ooh, that's big
time. So, Hall of Fame Jim Brown, Hall of Fame Eric Dickerson, and 2,000-yard Eric Dickerson, 2,000-yard Terrell Davis, and Jim Brown had, what, 1,846 in?
And all Hall of Famers, Terrell Davis.
All Hall of Famers, yes. Right? Jim Brown had 1,846 or 1,864 in his big season. That was the record that O.J. broke when he got 2,003.
And that was in, like, 14 games?
The Jim Brown thing was either in 12 or 14. O.J.'s was in 14. Yeah. Oh. And then it went to 16. O.J. did it in 1973. And then it went to 16 games in 70.
Make sure everybody that's streaming is watching this live. Make sure you follow Mickey's eyeballs because that is where he's pulling the answers
right. You know me, though. I hate to be wrong on anything but the 70s. I hate to be wrong on that.
I wouldn't even try to attempt to even know that information.
I hate to be wrong on that. OJ had 2003 and 23 touchdowns in his big year, 73. All right. It's a big year for us, and it's a big hour, too. And Doug Matthews is going to join us to talk Vols and Ole Miss, and that's coming up next on Blake and Mickey.